Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
When Congress did not act on the Obama administration's climate change legislation, the president ordered the EPA to move in under the Clean Air Act and for states and utilities to reduce their use of coal. Minnesota and some other states signed on, but Wisconsin and more than two dozen other states went to court against the move, claiming the EPA was overstepping its authority. Minnesota is not only working on compliance with the plan, it has joined a group of other states in defending the EPA and the Obama administration's efforts. Just a few days ago, lawyers were in court in the District of Columbia arguing the fate of the plan. In this hour, the stakes in this fight and what the outcome may mean for consumers and the global attempt to stem changes in the climate. Joining us this hour is Jody Freeman. She's a professor of law at Harvard, where she directs their environmental program. She is also a former White House official. She joins us this morning from Houston, Texas. Professor Freeman, thank you for joining us.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Could you tell us, what does this mean for consumers?
Well, I think for consumers, it actually will not have a significant impact on electricity costs. At least the projections from the grid managers who really operate the electricity grid seem to be that wholesale prices as a result of this clean power plan could range in about 1% to 2% higher. So it's not that it will have a dramatic impact on the purchasing of electricity. What it will do, though, is finally control greenhouse gas emissions that are coming from the power sector, which are, of course, contributing to climate change.
Mm-hmm. And how would it reduce these greenhouse gases? What would it do in a practical sense, or say in a practical sense, to states and utilities?
Right. Let me back up and just provide a little context. The Clean Power Plan is a rule that has been promulgated by the Environmental Protection Agency. And the rule is basically a pollution control rule that says to all of the utilities across the country, the entire power sector, that they're going to have to set limits on their carbon pollution. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a historic move. We've never had any carbon pollution control at all for the power sector. And so this is a very significant step because the power sector generates the disproportionate share of carbon pollution in the U.S. economy. You can't make any progress on climate change unless you try to control emissions from that sector. The other contextual thing to know for your listeners is that the Clean Power Plan is a pillar of the U.S. commitment to reduce emissions that it has basically submitted to the international negotiations, which are known as the Paris Agreement. And so it's a kind of important day to be talking about this because yesterday the final step was taken to bring the Paris Agreement into force, and it should come into force next month. Enough countries have adopted the Paris Agreement, and it's been ratified by enough nations emitting enough emissions that it will become effective. And the U.S. commitment is based in significant measure on this Clean Power Plan succeeding. So that's all important background. To answer your question of how it practically works, mm-hmm. what the Environmental Protection Agency did was it said to all the coal-fired units that generate power and all the natural gas-fired units that generate power across the country that they have to meet a certain standard of control. And all of the states can help those utilities comply by figuring out plans that will help accomplish cost-effective reductions. So they can use energy efficiency, they can invest in renewable energy, they can switch to natural gas from coal, a whole set of compliance options that are quite flexible that states can adopt. And Minnesota has already announced that it's on board, as you said in the opener, that it's prepared to comply with these new standards. And it's in pretty good shape to do so, partly because, your biggest utility, Xcel, is already proposing to retire two of its largest coal-fired units in the 2020s. I think it's at the Sherco facility. And that will help Minnesota get most of the way it needs to get to meet its target under the Clean Power Plan.
Right, and it's taking some pretty big steps on wind energy as well. Why are some utilities and industries, and there are those in Minnesota, along with Iowa and Wisconsin, why are they so concerned about this?
Well, there is a coalition of industry groups, utility sector, power plants, and states, actually 28 states challenging this, as you mentioned. And that is the fight that's playing out in the courts right now. And on the other side are states like Minnesota defending the plan. And the government, of course, is arguing that it's perfectly legal, reasonable, and cost-effective and should be upheld. And this all culminated in the 7-hour marathon argument mm-hmm. you talked about in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the court just below the Supreme Court, which heard argument in this case toward the end of last month. It was really quite an amazing argument with states lined up on both sides of this issue, utilities lined up on both sides of this issue. And what the petitioners, those who are challenging this rule, say is that the Environmental Protection Agency, in the first place, doesn't have the authority to set these standards, that the Clean Air Act doesn't allow them to do it. And they say that because power plants are already regulated for their toxic pollution. And their legal argument is that once you're regulating them for their toxic pollution, the way the law works is you can't regulate them again. It would be double regulation. And the government's response to that is, well, that doesn't make any sense, because under the Clean Air Act, different pollution means you get regulated under separate programs. Mm-hmm. So this is carbon pollution and not toxics. So that's an argument that's really fundamentally about, can EPA even do this in the first place? There's a second argument that the challengers are making, which is, okay, even if EPA has the power, if you read the Clean Air Act provision carefully, you see that EPA has to set these standards based on the best system of reducing emissions.
Right.
And the challengers say that means EPA has to determine what the technology is, the best technologies for each of these units. And best system means doing things at the electric generating unit itself, right there on site, to make it work more efficiently and control its pollution. What they say is you cannot do what EPA has done, which is to look across the entire grid where all these units are interconnected. You know, we get electricity from an interconnected network. Mm-hmm. And what EPA did was look across that grid and say, you know, the best system of reducing these emissions is to use all the levers we have on this interconnected grid to ramp up natural gas, ramp down coal, use more renewable energy, and if we look across the whole grid, we see that the best system has all these opportunities available. And so that challenge, that's really a fight about the methodology mm-hmm. that EPA used to set the standard. So those are the two big legal questions in this case, and it was a marathon and very impressive legal argument. But I think the signals from the bench, from the 10 judges, the full sitting judges of all of the judges on the D.C. Circuit, in this extraordinary case, I think the signals from them were that I think there's a reasonable chance to be optimistic here that the rule will be upheld.
Right. Well, and in Minnesota, there are rural areas and some municipalities which get their power from the Dakotas, and they've joined in opposition to this. If it's struck down, if this plan is struck down, what happens to Minnesota?
Well, it's interesting. I, if it's struck down, which would be a dramatic result, I think what will happen is the new administration, because the legal outcome won't be known until the presidential election is long over, mm-hmm. a new administration would have to decide what it wants to do. If it were a Clinton administration, one could imagine an effort to replace the Clean Power Plan with a different policy, to look to see what other authorities the administration would have under the Clean Air Act, and there are some backup ideas, or perhaps try again to press the United States Congress to take action to adopt a more comprehensive approach to dealing with climate change. If it were a Trump administration, I mean, I don't really know any better than anybody else what that administration might do on these issues. Trump has signaled that he is against regulation. So it might be that they would be pleased to have this struck down.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be an awful lot of pressure on the United States because of its commitment to the Paris Agreement and because of its leadership with China toward addressing climate change globally, a lot of pressure on a new administration to make good on its pledges. We won't know the legal outcome for a while, as I say. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals will probably take several months to decide this case. It's complicated. There are a lot of legal issues that I didn't mention that also are part of the challenge. And so it takes several months at least to come up with a decision. And then, of course, in all likelihood, one side or the other, whichever loses, will want the Supreme Court to review it. And they'll petition the Supreme Court. And so that will take perhaps a year in addition to have the court consider whether to hear it, and then if they say, yes, we're going to review it, to go through the process of reviewing it and issue an ultimate decision. So
wow,
it'll be a while.
That's a long time frame, and there is a vacancy on the court, right?
Yes.
So that reverts back to presidential politics. Is it possible that there would be a new member on the court who would also sit in judgment on this in review of the lower court ruling?
Yes. It's amazing how interesting this has become. You cannot make this stuff up. To have 10 judges on the D.C. Circuit, so in theory you could have a tie there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we'll see that. But then to go to the Supreme Court and think you could have a tie vote there unless we see a ninth justice appointed in time. Again, the outcome of the balance of the Supreme Court is going to depend on the presidential election. So if it were a Democratic administration, you'd expect a ninth justice to be nominated who might be more open to the government's arguments on the Clean Power Plan. So we will see what happens there. The worst case scenario for the court long term is to be stuck with this 8 members where they have potentials for ties. They eagerly want a ninth justice. But it's interesting because in this case, a tie would actually reinforce whatever the D.C. Circuit does.
Right.
It would leave that in place. And so the D.C. Circuit decision is to uphold this rule. The 8-member court might not be such a terrible thing for this one rule.
Right. A lot of factors at play here.
Yes.
Professor Jody Freeman, thank you for taking time to talk with us about this. We'd like to come back to you once we get a little clearer view on what's going to happen with this.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Jody Freeman is a professor of law at Harvard, where she directs their environmental program. She is also a former White House official in the Obama White House. She joined us this morning from Houston, Texas.